Ethernet virtual private networks is a fairly large group of technologies that makes it possible to build Ethernet over IP networks. That is an Ethernet overlay under an IP network physical layer. The well-known weaknesses in Ethernet relates to its design, where it uses broadcast and multicast to discover hosts, and switches must use flood and learn methods to build MAC address tables and to, you know, generally work out the topology that's got. Now, the end result is that Ethernet networks are, well, to be honest, unstable and generally unpredictable. And specifically, at scale, it's just not possible to run a business safely using Ethernet. The success of many different SDN platforms in the last few years has convinced large numbers of engineers that overlay networks are actually the way forward. There's been lots of pushback, but finally, tunneling L2 over L3 means that the physical network is actually much simpler, much more stable and reliable, and we have a foundation for where we can go back to the business with trust and predictability and say, at least the network's working, the overlay is something different. Now, of course, we still need to build an Ethernet-compatible overlay that supports the features that we have today. Flood and learn, MAC forwarding tables, broadcast, unicast, multicast handling, all of those things, that long list remains substantial. So in this sponsored show with Cisco Systems, we are diving deeper into EVPN, and we're going to look not just at a brief overview of the technology, but three use cases: data center overlays, data center interconnect, and carrier Ethernet. And think about that for a second. One of the really unique things about the EVPN technology set is that it not only works for enterprises, it also works for carriers. It's just possible that EVPN could be a universal technology that spans many markets and something for us all to focus on. Today, we are welcoming Nicolas Breton. He's a product manager, and Patrice Brissette, who's also a principal engineer with Cisco in the EVPN technology suite. Gentlemen, welcome so much to the show and thank you for your time.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Let's start out by setting a baseline about EVPN for those who haven't heard of it. I'm pretty sure if you've been listening to Packet Pushers Up Now, you'll have heard me talking quite a lot about how excited I am about EVPN and how I see it as a venture of the future. But Patrice, maybe if you want to kick us off with, or Nicolas, whoever, just jump in. Tell us what's going on in the industry that's kind of driving this EVPN technology.
Yeah, this is Nicolas. I'm going to jump in. So basically what's happening in industry, right, is called the mass scale networking, right? So it's really a disruptive force that's, you know, shaking the VPN landscape. So what it means is that VPN requirements are changing. Network operators, they have emerging needs in their network, data center interconnect operations. They need virtualizations from a service perspective, from a cloud perspective. And they're also trying to really remove some protocols and simplify the network because it's growing, right, at a mass scale. Operations become more complex just because of the scale of it. So anything that can be done to simplify that operation is going to be key. And so we'll see how that
relates. When you say we're removing protocols, are you specifically referring to things like spanning tree, you know, which we all know and distrust? Is that the protocol being removed, and is there others?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. Spanning tree is being removed because, you know, we're introducing a control plane, EVPN control plane. So it's definitely simplifying the control plane layer. And EVPN is relying on BGP, which is pretty well-known protocol.
So in a sense, we're replacing spanning tree with a BGP mechanism to distribute the MAC addresses. So we don't need spanning tree to build a topology to make it loop free. We use the BGP algorithm to build a loop free topology for MAC address forwarding.
Absolutely. And this is a major benefit. Our customers have understood this in the data centers. And they want to use that EVPN control plane for the wide area and for, you know, the overall VPN services, and especially our layer 2 ones that goes across large networks. Mm.
So we're not talking about IPsec VPNs here or encrypted VPNs. They're something a little bit separate for now. What we're talking about doing is creating literally virtual networks over the top of a trusted physical network layer at this point in time. And we need the network to be trusted because we need to be configuring the BGP that's in there to propagate the configuration information related to the Ethernet.
Yeah, we're not talking about encryption here. We are talking about VPN, an Ethernet VPN, and being capable of carrying this VPN across the wide area or, you know, the core or the edge or the aggregation of a service provider networks. That becomes more complex today because there is also introduction of more and more of micro DC or data centers connectivity is very important. So EVPN play a key role in that aspect as well.
Now, the other thing about EVPN is it also scales to this idea of virtualization, where one server can have, well, hundreds of virtual servers inside of it. EVPN is able to let us sort of scale up to that sort of, you know, where before we used to have 300 servers in a data center, now we have, still have 300 servers, but now we have 20, 50, 100 servers per physical server. So the scale of the data center is changing or transforming.
The scale is transforming at a very high speed, actually. And for that reason, one single control plane, right, to go across the overall data center architecture is very critical. And it provides, of course, it provides the scale required for today's network, but it also provides other functionalities like ability to move virtual machines and so on, because it has a broader view of the network. So it provides even more flexibility.
Now, one thing I was also trying to, that I would like to add here is with the data center, interconnect, and the WAN, and the aggregation access that Nicola was talking is, the EVPN, what is cool about it is bring you a common control plane, because if you look at the existing solution that we built over the past maybe 10 years, we have a bunch of mix of technology, right? We have Trill, we have Fabric Path for the data center, on the DCI, we have the VPLS, we have the OTV. The WAN core, we came out with L3 VPN, the L2 VPN, the VPLS, which use LDP. So you have all of those many, many protocols. And now it becomes almost like, it's an ocean of different fish that you need to figure out, okay, who's doing what, who's going to eat what, and so on. So with a VPN, what we are saying is, let's remove all of these protocols and have a common one, and people can understand what this is. Like, once you know EVPN, you can apply it to any of those type of networks. They don't need to relearn or do like an interop or a migration. And it's a single protocol that can do them all, basically. Mm. And again, and as we said, I think previously, is also totally agnostic of your underlay. So, like in data center, very popular one is VXLAN. And then you go into your one, very popular one is more maybe in PLS. Well, it's the same control plane, right? So that makes it very attractive and quite friendly for the user, because again, they have a single way of controlling all of your network.
Now, would this apply to... So Patrice, would this apply to every network? Because some folks are sitting here thinking about, like, I've just got a mid-sized campus network. Should I be applying EVPN, or should I stick with my traditional spanning tree kind of environment?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think to answer those questions is, well, first of all, you need to do a smart move, right? I think you need to first look at what type of application that you're going to be running. For sure, spanning tree, you can keep it there, and if it works, it works. But if you want to make an evolution of your mid-size network, as you say, and getting more virtualization on Eve, you will need something which is much better than spanning tree, obviously, right? So,
well, I was going to say, exactly. I mean, one of the big things about EVPN is this ability to load balance across multiple links. Now, normally with a spanning tree, we use fat tree architectures, and that's where we start using multi-chassis lag and LACP bundles, right? And so then you end up with either stacking or some sort of virtual chassis technology, and that gives you, 2 by 10 gigs or 4 by 10 gigs, but it doesn't give you 16 by 10 gigs or 16 by 100 gigs, which is where we're really heading in the data center over the next 10 years. So I think that one of the less underestimated parts of EVPN is that it allows us to have an IP substrate or an IP routed physical network, which can build an ECMP. So this means a leaf spine architecture. You can't build leaf spine with spanning tree because it just doesn't meet, you can't build a tree and have multiple paths. It collapses. Right. And so having BGP EVPN allows me to have, I built 3 years ago a network which had 12 by 40 gigs up from every switch, and it was load balancing across each of those 12. So, well, that's half a terabit per second between two switches, and there was 12 switches in, this is a real transition in the way we design networks. So now we have this effectively unlimited bandwidth in the LAN, the data center LAN, for the first time. I think that's a key transition there about, all paths are active and load balanced. And, in the case of a failure condition, you just lose one of those paths, hopefully, if it's a spine switch, whatever. And so you really have this transformation where EVPN can really take us forward and also lowers the latency. So in the data center, you have the east-west. So once upon a time, you had to go from the leaf node to the distribution node to the core node, back to the distribution to the leaf node. And you'd have this very low speed. Each hop would cause latency. Well, now with the ECMP, you're removing that latency by moving to a very flat network. But more important, it's the same the same bandwidth everywhere in the network. So there's a bunch of things that if we could get away from this tree type architectures and their mission critical deployments of limited resources in the middle, you know, EVPN takes advantage of all that, you know, layer three, all paths active, nice, simple control plane, BGP. You know, while I may have reservations about BGP as being a fairly dumb protocol, ultimately it's fairly simple and easy to maintain. Everybody understands it. Does that all make sense to you?
I think it is. But also one thing actually, it's, and I think you touched, which is very important, is EVPN, when it has been designed, is it has in mind that we always need to have optimal forwarding. So especially in the data center, as you mentioned, the east-west traffic will always be optimal forwarding, and same thing for the north-south. So, and you cannot achieve that otherwise with the other legacy protocol that we have in the hand.
So EVPN is actually a group of technologies. So we're talking a little bit here about, you know, there's different types of EVPNs or Ethernet VPNs over the last few years. Do you want to talk a little bit about how they fit into this Cisco EVPN model?
Yeah, I can talk to this. So there's really different aspect of EVPN, right? There's EVPN VPWS, which is pretty much placing a what we know as the Ethernet pseudo wires, and that's a point to point. And there's benefit of using EVPN to do point to point services. And one of the major benefits is there's no pseudo wire signaling anymore. All the exchange of information between both end of these pseudo wires, we are pretty much taken care of. So, you know, it's stateless. That's another benefit. So you don't need a protocol like LDP, for example, to maintain the state of the pseudo wires. So that's one of the benefits here for the EVP and VPWS. But there's other services as well. And there's the multipoint services, ELAN services. There's also E-tree service, where basically the service pretty much acting like a tree. And finally, there's a DCI type of services, which are more complex because usually you swap from a particular transport to another one. So you really do getaway functionalities there.
So this means that suddenly we're moving away from fairly complex, fairly disparate protocols, because some of those old Ethernet technologies, you know, ELAN and E-line and E-tree, were all a bit of a problem. Now we're using a unified signaling campaign, and that should theoretically simplify it for quite a few of us, I think. So let's move into some of the other benefits, like multi-homing and PE load balancing. How does that sort of look?
All right. So, but I think you already touched base on that a bit previously. Mm. Well, this is the all active, right, that EVPN is bringing to the game, and it's really a game changing, because now instead of having one active members and the other ones in standby that you don't really use, or you might use only half of it, now both links connected to a CE or a host, now they are fully active. So with this is, first of all, well, you have more bandwidth, right? And also, if you look at the convergence, when one of the two legs fail, the convergence is much better, because you rely on ECMP, fast convergence, like mass withdrawal, to do the failover. So this is major benefit that All Active is bringing to the game. If you look also from a remote P point of view, whenever it forwards the traffic back to that redundancy group where the All Active is, ECMP now can be performed, and you can do also advanced stuff like UCMP, because you can select how much bandwidth before with VPLS you were not able to do, because you have so many problems with all active. Well, it doesn't work with VPLS and all active, right? So,
right. So this idea of fast convergence is all based on BGP. Is that what it is? Is it really just because the MAC tables are held in the BGP protocol, like the MAC addresses are moved into the BGP and the BGP pushes them around? So BGP knows where everything is, and that's where the convergence comes from, or is there some other protocol in there?
Well, from the EVPN point of view, with the auto-discovery route that has been designed, we are bringing the concept of mass withdrawal. Basically, what we are doing is EVPN that has we develop like a grouping scheme, right? The grouping scheme that say all of these MAC belongs to that group. So you create a level of indirection, and then you can just withdraw that level, or you can destroy their level of indirection, and then all the MAC address belonging to that group will just get like kind of become an unresolved state. So with the type of mechanism, it's like a prefix and independent convergence, right? With where you say withdraw this and all the MAC gets affected, instead of withdrawing, let's say, 20,000 MACs that you might have learned over your network, right? Yeah, that's how EVPN solved this.
So with Ethernet for broadcast, unknown unicast, mm-hmm. and so on, you know, bump traffic, broadcast, unknown unicast, and multicast, there's a process to learn all of that, and we're all really familiar mm-hmm. with it, anybody that knows Ethernet, particularly for broadcast and unknown unicast traffic. How do you deal with that in eVPN? Because it's all about broadcast, or it's all about sharing known right. MAC address endpoints. So there's got to be some mechanism VPN, to handle,
you know,
this other stuff.
Flood and learn, right? So no issue with this. You can still do that, by the way. it does work very well. But what eVPN is bringing is more you can tell upfront. Because see, the beauty about eVPN is we use BGP, where you can self-announce yourself so other people can discover who you are, right? So then if you look at eVPN that way from a bomb traffic point of view, you can tell people, hey, I'm here for that service, and everybody do that. So now whenever you have like access traffic coming to your router and say, oh, it's a multicast, I need to send it to everyone. Usually, well, in VPLS, if you have 100 Ps, everyone will receive it. Now, what you're gonna do is you're gonna broadcast or flood only to the P which are interested by the service that you have. And that's the beauty about it. So if you have 10 P which of those 100 P which has the same VPN, only these 10 will receive the traffic instead of everyone receive it.
So there's some kind of IGMP snooping going on where that the flooding for the multicast level of flooding
is determined.
Well,
actually, there's multiple levels,
right?
The first basic one is what the VPN provide itself with the the inclusive multicast route. So basically, you're just announcing to the people, if you want to send BAM traffic to me, here's what the information you need to use for reachability. So that's the first level. On top of that, you have other flexible, advanced mechanism. The IGMP snooping is one, as you mentioned, but it needs to be tied up also with VPN. But along with that, you can do also selective multicast. So you can be selective multicast based on the IGMP snooping that you're doing in the access. So, and you can tell the other people, hey, ship your bump traffic towards me.
So that means that effectively what you're saying is the endpoint, so the edge switch in the network, sees the MAC address of the server using the usual sort of MAC discoveries. The server mm-hmm. would have to do a gratuitous ARP or an ARP, and then it gets into, and then the edge device then loads that MAC table into the BGP eVPN MAC address, and then it tells all of the other BGP speakers that I have this MAC address in my table, my local table, so if you need it. But this means that the only people who see that MAC address are other people in the same eVPN, so in the same VXLAN ID. So you don't actually have this flooding where every switch has to have a MAC entry regardless of whether it needs it or not.
No.
So in a switch network, if you've got the VLAN configured, then every MAC address in that VLAN is in your table regardless of whether you've ever used it or not. Right.
Exactly.
Whereas in a BGP eVPN, you're getting a much more efficient usage. And this leads to a much more efficient use of TCAMs, which is part of how we get the scaling out of eVPN compared to legacy switching, because you don't have to maintain expensive TCAM entries in the silicon to just maintaining forwarding information that probably will never be used.
But furthermore, it's a little bit more than that also. Like locally, I agree with what you said, but also within the core, if you flood less your core, it means you have more bandwidth in your core to do something else with it.
Well, flooding is also complicated because in the silicon, it has to do duplication or replication.
Exactly.
One frame comes in and then it has to go out. You know, if you've got a 48-port switch plus four uplinks, there's 52 ports. Mm-hmm. A MAC address comes in on one. Well, I have to replicate that out of the other 51 ports in the worst case.
Yep.
Well, now something in your switch has to do that. And we've actually seen switches just die when there's too many replication. The switch just goes, oh, death. You can only have a small rate, 50,000 frames, 100,000 frames, whatever it is, and the switch will continue to work. So this reduces some of those. And this is where some of the stability is coming from. It's not just spanning tree, it's actually inside the switches themselves, which I think is important to highlight. Some of the other things about eVPN is that it's standardized, right? Cisco's been leading the IETF standard. And I just want to touch on this because I think it's important to understand that this is not just a Cisco thing. This is actually an industry-wide effort.
Actually, since day one, I think multiple vendor, and lead by Cisco, has been working on eVPN. Actually, if you go to IETF, we are one of the most boring work group because we are too friendly to each other, because we're all working together to get eVPN out. So there's no fight, and it's quite boring, actually. It's very boring.
I don't know. I've seen some I've seen some Barneys going on between in the bathroom. Well, but, I've seen, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. It might not look very exciting from the outside. But
if you want to go sleep, go to bed.
There's still some. Aren't there still some interoperability challenges though with cross vendor, Patrice?
To be frank, all the vendors has been doing a fantastic job of being very collaborative. So because of that, I think EVPN has moved quite fast and you know what? We have already like a bunch of RFCs out, like RFC for 7432, which is the EVPN base RFC is already out. We have one for EVPN BPWS, PVPN has been out, and there's EVPN RV, I think it will be very adapted, becoming an RFC very, very soon, same for E3. So everything goes very well because people work together as if we were a single team. Do we have challenge? Well, sometimes we might have debates on very minor details, but overall, it's been an awesome job that all the people has been doing, and as you said, there's a lot of work happening prior to those ITF meetings. So I was on a call last Friday with some other vendors just to discuss about the EVPN and new draft and so on. So people are, see, we call each other, we work, and we all want the same benefit to have EVPN to be the best standard as we can. So I think that's come down also to your first statement that yes, it's multi-vendor because people wants to make it multi-vendor and everyone has an interest that everyone has it.
So if you want to learn more, actually, there's quite an interesting working group. There's an entire working group that's sort of been turned into the EVPN working group. It's called the BESS, the BGP Enabled Services, BESS. It's at tools.ietf.org/wg/BESS. And this is where all of the standards around EVPN come in. And there's a lot of them. There's like, I thought there was 30 going on 40 standards covering all the different areas. And I just want to touch on this very quickly because a key part about EVPN is that Yang models are under development. There's a lot of optimized. They're into the start where they're starting to work on optimization phases, how to do service chaining, and that type of stuff. So this isn't a standard that's just come out of anywhere. This is actually quite mature. And I have been following EVPN now for about 3 years and trying to track. I'm not very good at it because compared to the people on the call, but it is something that I've been tracking and I do actually think has critical momentum.
And furthermore, also, if you go in the NVO3 workgroup, also the because now it was VXLAN more like a VXLAN approach, it's been now migrated to Geneve. But if you look at what they are using as a control plane, EVPN is there as well. But the standard of VPN is in BESS, but applicability of it goes also in NVO3 workgroup.
So a couple of things before we start talking about the use cases that we've got, I just want to talk about a couple of things in EVPN standards that if I've got some questions and then just tell me where we are with those. So with Ethernet, one of the things that we quite often get is that the server's connected dual-homed and people want to create link aggregation groups with those. Does EVPN support that today or is that something that's in progress?
Like the you mean the MCLAG ICCP-based approach?
Yeah, well, I mean like quite often with VMware servers, you put two Ethernet ports and then you just trunk the VLANs out to the ESX servers so that they can have all the VLANs and then the server people just connect to the appropriate VLAN. Is that something that EVPN supports today is just VLAN trunking and dual homing, like link aggregation groups or port aggregation groups to the servers?
Since day one, we do support, anyway, in Cisco, we do support the three major, the port mode, which is most likely looks like your trunk port that you're just talking about. Yep. We do support also the VLAN base and also the VLAN bundle. So VLAN bundle would be more like you can set up a ranch and say, hey, this is a service, like these bunch of VLANs are a service, and you can tie it up to any EVPN technology, let's say ELAN, E-Line, or E3. So,
And so this is where I think Cisco's a little different from the others is that their implementation of EPN actually supports these kinds of features that customers are expecting, whereas other vendors' implementations may not have quite embraced that level of sophistication in the device yet.
I think, no, to be frank, I think this is the if you want to support EVPN, that's the basic. So I think other vendor has most at least very similar support, and I think I'm pretty sure they do have it. I think where it's a bit more complex is more about how they evolve their multi-homing and towards the access. So what they support there, I think it might slightly be different from vendor to vendor.
Right. But in general terms, you could say this is an open standard that, and you could have multi-vendor solutions operating together, and not necessarily because you want to do that in the network, but because you want the servers to integrate, or because you want, maybe you want a container network to interoperate with your EVPN, and there's some software in there like Kubernetes or something that might support that, and that's what we're hoping for.
Oh, we do. For sure, but in a way, if you look at our customer, it's pretty rare they're gonna tie it up to a single vendor. So most likely they will always develop their network with a multi-vendor approach, right? Mm-hmm. So EVPN must be standard, right? Must be supported within standard. Otherwise, that will not work, and EVPN is gonna die pretty fast.
Now, one of the questions that I want to ask is, we live in a world of software defined, and we have this software control of networks as being very powerful. So, Nicholas, is EVPN something that's fit for purpose for software defined, and is that something that's coming here, or is it something that we think will come out in the future?
All right. So from a software defined perspective, we are seeing our customers are interested in adding more software control, right? On top of the network, if you want, right? So that's what you are calling the SDN controller, right? So SDN controller will definitely interact with the network controller, and BGP and EVPN is the component of it. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question here, but from an application perspective, right, what we are seeing is some customers are interested in virtualizing network functions, right? And for doing this, they want to leverage controllers and orchestrators, right? So a more centralized manners of operating the network, right? And that component is the one that's going to talk BGP and EVPN. So we are seeing this happening now. Patrice, what do you see on your side?
Yeah, I think, well, since EVPN uses BGP, and actually one thing that we can use as to compare the with SDN is see, okay, BGP has a route reflector that reflects all the routes that we are doing with EVPN.
Yep.
I can see easily that you can replace that EVPN route reflector by a controller, and then you can do more cool stuff, right, with EVPN in the future. So replace your
R. You could do device provisioning using software, but it's going to be a very traditional provisioning model. That is, you go in, you configure the VLANs, you configure the VXLANs, you configure the VGPs.
But I think
the
controller should be more.
And then BGP is going to be self-automating in a way. I think with an EVPN solution, really, once you've set up the parameters, it's like the old, once the protocol's working, it's self-configuring.
Yes, but no, indeed. But I don't think, well, okay, let me ask you a question. It's my turn. So will you use SDN to just do configuration over your network?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we've come to the situation where software control of network configuration and operations is now standard going forward. Now, that may not be what people are using today, but over a 5 to 10 year horizon, I think everybody expects to be able to have a software platform that sets up the device configuration and then monitors the device and takes analytics and telemetry data off the solution to tell you how the operation of the network is doing that. Now, one of the things I really like about EVPN is I don't have to configure and touch every single device from the software platform, because it's all BGP, and to a large extent, BGP is self-configuring. The MAC address is discovered, it goes into the BGP, it's propagated across, the VXLAN ID and the tables of all those. So I don't need to tell each edge device which MAC addresses exist from a central controller, but I still want to have the centralized control, because it's not practical for me at a large scale network to be using the CLI to configure these devices. I need some way to do better, more accurate, greater control, configuration revisions, testing, validation that I can't do just using the CLI. And that's more where my point was coming from.
Yes. No, I agree with you, because EVPN, again, auto-provisioning is one of the key aspects of it. But however, where the benefit I was seeing about your SDN controller into the picture is, and I think you stated clearly, is with telemetry, you can have a feedback loop, right? And then you can play again with your EVPN to get optimal forwarding or workload placement or whatsoever that you want to do with EVPN, because you have a centralized point that you have a lot of intelligence that you can apply and build some algorithm, so you can feedback your EVPN network and make sure that you have the best service.
All right, let's move the discussion along to start talking about the use cases. We've identified three use cases, so let's get stuck into those. Let's talk about how EVPN changes the inside the data center.
Yeah, so specifically intra-data center stuff. So I think, you know, early on, we kind of set the context for this, where it's about virtualizing that data center. There's been so many different ways that we can do data center virtualization over the last several years, but you know, maybe we're converging around EVPN finally as the way to do it. And would you guys talk about that?
You want to start, Nicola?
Go ahead, Patrice. I'm putting my thought together right now. So,
well, I was expecting you to answer that question. So,
all right. So let me try to rephrase. Right. So what you guys are hinting here is there is a case for EVPN in a data center, right? So that's what we call intra-data center, but there's also inter-data center, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later. So just want to make sure we are on the same page here.
We are, yeah. So starting right with intra first, multi-tenancy and so on, we'll get to inter in a minute.
So some of the benefit we have seen, right, for the introduction of EVPN, right, an additional control plane in a data center, I'm going to try to describe them. But just to give a big picture here, I think initially what we have seen is the data center designs were initially pretty much using VXLAN with a flood and learn mechanisms. And there was initially, at least from a Cisco perspective, the EVPN control plane came a little bit later. But there's very good reason for this, right? And you know, when you live in a multi-tenancy environment and you need to do L2 and L3 services in a data center, it's going to become very complex. So EVPN is definitely providing some centralizations and simplifications of things. But overall, I think the first thing that it brings in the data center is, you know, elimination of the flood and learn in the data center, which is a typical mechanism of, you know, like you were describing before, layer two switches. Because you are using EVPN now to distribute the MAC address, and you can be much more efficient, and you can really optimize the way the MACs are learned, but also how the traffic is going to be flowing through the data center. So major.
Yeah, and this goes back to one of the big use cases for EVPN, or one of the big promises, I wouldn't say use cases, but promises of EVPN back in the day. We didn't have a good control plane for VXLAN and for learning. Now, you wanted to run IP multicast, or you needed to run IP multicast for certain things to work. Now with EVPN, you don't have to run IP multicast in your data center, which is a relief for a lot of shops that wouldn't have had a reason to run otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the requirements, right, to turn on multicast on the underlay, right, on the IP underlay for VXLAN, I think was a major constraint. Our customer were doing it, but I think if they can avoid doing it, it's much better. So EVPN completely removed that requirement. So that's, I think that has been very well received from that aspect. And that's where we are seeing good traction in EVPN deployments in the data centers.
The cool thing also is, because like VXLAN is really kind of widely deployed in those data center, as soon as you start talking about integration of layer 2 and layer 3, like the integrated routing and bridging interface, EVPN is pretty cool of that, because now it brings it with that single protocol, you can do all your layer 2 and your layer 3, because thanks to the RAP type 5 that has been created over VXLAN, you can achieve exactly what we have done, like for something very similar with L3 VPN / VPLS before, but all within a single protocol.
Yeah, but it wasn't possible to build a VPLS L2 extension technology in the data center before for various different reasons, least of which was that it was very difficult to set up VPLS. It was really designed for carriers to have a circuit emulation from point A to point B. It wasn't really intended to be a data center scale technology, I never thought. Yeah. But I do feel that EVPN is really a step forward here, in the sense that this ability to automate the discovery of MAC addresses and propagate the information and to have very large numbers of VLANs. So because the VXLAN, and if you're using VXLAN, there's many other ways you can use PBB, MPLS, so you can have, you know, 16 million VLANs is kind of the way that you're looking at this as a, you know, as a total address space. So now all of a sudden you can actually start to give each customer 4,000 VLAN IDs per, you know, isolated space inside of the EVPN. You really got some great powerful capabilities.
See, with the point I was trying to make is also that we EVPN brought the layer 3 to VXLAN. Because without the VPN, how can you do L3, right? You don't have VPN V4 working on VXLAN. So EVPN there therefore becomes de facto the control protocol for L2 and L3 over VXLAN.
And we're not using IP multicast here. For those people who got involved with VXLAN very early, we were using multicast as a flooding mechanism. EVPN takes that out. So you don't need to grapple with IP multicast and the challenges of that. Like, it's a difficult technology to understand and build trees. And so the EVPN just replaces all that with BGP, which I think is just worth stating out loud in case you remember that.
Let me ask a qualifying question here. For there's a lot of folks that build data centers, and they've got this requirement to put their L2 all over the data center. They don't want to, but they end up having to build this huge broadcast domain that spreads across a whole bunch of racks and living with the misery of that spanning tree that's all over the place just because that's the way they had to build the thing. Does life get better with EVPN? Is it can I still do that but have it not? But I'm not the victim of
cool,
a huge
The cool things with EVPN is you can do intra and inter subnet within your data center. So the thing is, what we are proposing here in Cisco is obviously the it's more like distributed anycast RRB that you you're gonna do on your leaf or your Tor device, and with a symmetric RRB. So if you do it that way, so what is happening is you will always have optimal forwarding for east-west traffic and north-south as well. And furthermore, if you do with the distributed incast gateway, it gives you pretty cool things for VM motion, because now your VM motion is kind of seamless, because since all the leads has the same gateway in terms of has all the same IP in terms of gateway. So now you can do VM motion in the back and nobody see this. So so again, yes, it's pretty cool because, right, east-west traffic for intra-subnet is perfect, and inter-subnet is just optimal forwarding all the time.
I think the real key here is that we also need to talk about inter-data center with vMotion, because a lot of people are trying to extend VLANs between redundant data centers. And today they're using DCI technologies, which are kind of like, with the greatest respect in the world, they're nasty hacks. They try to reduce MAC address flooding in the underlay network, and they always end up sort of being a little ugly and a little brutal and a little bit unpredictable. But for me, EVPN also means that you can extend these VXLAN overlays between two data centers. So everything we just talked about within a single data center applies to this as a data center interconnect technology, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Beauty is on the DCI, you can keep your EVPN running in the WAN. So what it means is you can have L2 stretch across your WAN or your core through different data center. So again, what you just stated is then you have a freebie for an intra-subnet across your network.
And it's exactly the same technology that you're using inside a single data center. And now all of a sudden, the only issue that you need to think about for data center interconnect is how much bandwidth you need between the sites. All of a sudden, the Ethernet adjacencies are solved. The IP address of a given VLAN exists in both data centers safely. And you can also do some really nice stuff like multipathing in the WAN. So you can have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 WAN links between data centers. And because it's IP load balancing, BGP, you can actually just keep adding WAN links until you reach the bandwidth that you need to make it happy. It's not like the way we work with today's DCI, where you can only have like 210 gigs or 240 gigs. Yeah. And the only way you can scale is vertically, because it's IP routing underneath there. You can just start saying, well, it's cheaper for me to buy 810 gigs than it is for me to buy 240 gigs. I'll have 810 gigs. Boom.
Actually, one thing that to bring to your attention is, even though we are talking about VXN within data center, the core can be whatever, right? It can be an MPLS core, and EVPN will still run over the top. So as we said at the beginning, is EVPN is agnostic to underlay. So you can have a bunch of VXN data center, you interconnect them with an MPLS WAN, and that's going to work. And you can still achieve what we discussed so far. And furthermore,
you don't care, really.
I don't care.
could go and buy some dark fiber and then just use, you know, plug it into your routers, or you could go and put the dark fiber onto a DWDM, you know, get some, and then just ramp up the bandwidth, and it's all still the same thing.
And you know what? Even on your core, on the far end, you can have even some VPLS brownfield deployment, like a network attached to that WAN, running a VPN, and all of this can all work. So you can have VXLAN going through an VPN WAN, talking to a VPLS network, or can go to a different data center, which is, it's a segment routing data center, right? It's not even VXLAN, and all of that works with a VPN.
I quite like that piece. So even if you've got some existing stuff and you know you need to change it out, but it's going to take a year or two to get there, you can still just use it for now because it's just IP packets going across the top for your
GC.
And
by the way, we do also support it for IP VPN. So all the brownfield can remain there, and you can grow your network with a VPN. And now once you find out that VPN is cool and the king, then replace your old stuff and make it a VPN-ish as well.
So let me add a little bit of flavor here regarding the DCI. I think Patrice has covered pretty well the different aspect and the fact that EVPN can be used not only in the data center but across, and major benefits there. We have done quite some work to interact with the existing DCIs. So it can be a VPLS DCI, it can be a multi-pseudo DCI. We have done all the work to be compliant with this and being able to interop with legacy. That's something that is existing today on our platforms and with our EVPN implementations. The other benefit is to do EVPN across is, you know, you can do, and doing EVPN end-to-end is you really avoid the single homing, right? You always have dual homing capability, active with EVPN. So, you know, you make a much better use of bandwidth across the data centers, actually. And these can be very expensive links. So that's a very important aspect, actually,
that buying bandwidth between data centers is a fraught enterprise, because quite often you're trying to put LAN speed links between data centers to get the same performance in both. Yeah. And especially if you're trying to achieve active data center interconnects, where both, you know, a workload can be in data center A or data center B, you need to have very high speed links running between them, and usually at fairly short distances, but still not cheap buying 10 gig, 100 gig, 40 gig links in the WAN, even over, you know, 75 kilometer distances.
All right, guys, so we did hit intra data center, what's going on inside, inter data center, DCI, which still gives me the screaming heebie-jeebies, but if I've got to do DCI, and there are some good use cases for it, the EVPN solution is certainly interesting. What about carrier Ethernet? We were talking earlier about VPLS and some of its shortcomings and so on. As folks are looking for a carrier Ethernet solution, what is EVPN bringing to the table? I know we've talked about some of it, but let's go through that one more time.
Sorry, I find myself very boring now.
No, but just let me take it up then. I'll take it up, okay?
And maybe a good way to go about it, guys, is to talk about what's broken about VPLS. Or not broken, but what its shortcomings are that EVPN fixes for us.
Regarding the carrier Ethernet, so first that you need to understand is, I think when EVPN has been created, it was to address exactly all the problems that we are seeing in the carrier Ethernet. I don't think it was meant for data center personally. I think it becomes a solution for data center after in data center interconnect, because everyone saw the power of EVPN and how cool it is. So I think the journey of VPN started with the carrier Ethernet in mind, and three major problems that we saw actually with VPLS. Those three major problems, those three problems are a collateral of one feature that people are trying to do, which is supporting all active multi-homing in the access. So if you try to support all active multi-homing in the access, with VPLS, you're going to see these three problems. And those problems are the loop, packet loop, because, well, both links are forwarding. So guess what? If you start flooding, you're going to see it back in your face on the other link, right? So that's a nice way to crash your router. I tried, by the way. The other one is more if you... Okay, and again, if you flood again your core, guess what? Well, you're going to also see packet duplication, because if you're a remote piece and you flood the core towards the those two all active P's, well, packet duplication will happen for sure. And the last one is if you try to so whenever we do, let's say, even like unicast directional traffic from a pair of all active P's towards a remote P, on the remote P, what you're going to see is your MAC forwarding database doing a flip-flop, because it's going to point to the first P, going to point to the second P. You're going to point to the first P, you're going to point to the second, and then and then it will never stop, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the three major problems that with VPLS. EVPN solve all of these, and very quickly, actually. So for the packet loop, we have something called, Ethernet segment label, XCOM. This is, we call it like more like ESI filtering, and that will prevent all the loops that I just talked about. For the MAC duplication, well, this is BGP. Guess what? BGP will merge this, will merge the two routes, the two MAC address coming from the two PEs, and will merge it into a single route. So then, therefore, the remote PE can do ECMP. And well, since you merge that, you don't have neither a MAC flip-flop on the remote PE inside the forwarding database. So those are the three major problems that has been solved. So from a carrier Ethernet point of view, the cool news now is you have more bandwidth. So you can have more bandwidth coming to your core because both links are active. And other stuff that has been proposed also is all the seamless integration. If you look at the ITF, how many draft we have, is we can do now seamless integration with VPLS, with PBB VPLS, and you can do it with IPVPN. Because see, the thing is, service provider, it's pretty rare they're gonna come to us and say, "Hey, I have a greenfield deployment to do." And it doesn't happen, right? It's brownfield deployment, and now exactly. They are asking, "Oh, EVPN is cool, but I have that network. I pay already a lot of millions of dollars of equipment. I don't want to throw them away. I don't want to disrupt what I have right now. Otherwise, my client's gonna call me and say, 'What are you doing?'" I mean, so you need to be able to smoothly upgrade your network, going from, let's say, a VPLS, and now I can upgrade maybe 20 routers every month. If you have 200 P's on your network, is going to take something like 10 months or something like that. But at least you can move it slowly. And then after a while, bang, it becomes a VPN. As soon as it becomes a VPN, guess what? You can create data center and attach them to those ones. So from a carrier internet point of view, it's very interesting because they have now a way to get more revenue, create more application, more demand on their network. Voila.
Drop the mic.
And I think maybe the follow-up question, Patrice, is then are we seeing the carriers actually pick up this technology and start to deploy it, especially now that you've given them
the answer deployment. Guess what, for sure it's yes, otherwise we wouldn't have talked today. the thing is, see, migrating the networks is cool. And then what you can do is you can stretch their core with data center that we talked about before without having necessarily DCI, because usually, guess what? L2 is not that interesting when you think about it, right? When they build those, once service provider builds a core, they're going to put L3 VPN. It's huge, massive. But they say, hey, now it's huge and massive. How can I stretch it? How can I put more application on it? Guess what? You can turn on the VPN on it to ease it, but also you can create small pods where you stretch your L3 VPN into small data centers around it that we talked previously in this call. And furthermore, you say, okay, now I can have multiple applications. I can start virtualizing more what I'm doing. How do I bring now all my load of traffic, right? Like a 5G or everything which is in the access, then guess what? We have EVPN VPWS for that. So now you can also do all active in EVPN VPWS, bring your all load of traffic towards the either like an aggregation network or even like within straight a data center, which is a stretch of the core. You can do that. And we also created something like FXC, which is flexible cross-connect. And that also helps is the same concept by VPP and VPWS, but where you mux more VLAN into a big pipe. And all of that is to bring more traffic into your core, right? So EVPN can do all of this. That's the cool things about it. And yes, it is. And with seamless integration, people are just happy and they keep buying EVPN.
That was a lot of flag waving. Wow.
But I guess your point, right? What I do
feel
think
like I should be marching
carriers
or something.
Have all of this BGP expertise, or they think they do, and they think they're comfortable with it. Regardless of whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter, because as long as you think you're comfortable with it, you will be comfortable with a given technology. And they feel that bringing and this is where I am actually quite fond of EVPN, is that when I suggest it to people, they don't, because it's BGP and it looks like a routing protocol and it's self-configuring and self-automating in its own way, people just go, oh, well, that's really easy. I think I know how to work with that. It's not like SDN where you have to put aside what you used to know and suddenly move into a software-centric paradigm and all that sort of stuff. The VPN can actually just slide underneath, well, not underneath, goes underneath your servers, but over the top of your existing network. You don't actually have to change everything and throw it away. Well, you might have to change some things to get access to the features, but you basically don't have to throw away everything you know to bring it on board. And that's what I think is very important to carriers.
See, L3 VPN has been there for 20 years, right?
Yes.
The cool news is EVPN reuse all the principle of L3 VPN. So people, as soon as you talk EVPN, since they know L3 VPN, they know what you're talking about. So this is that simple.
Hey, Patrice, right. From that angle, right, the operation mode, right, of EVPN is similar to L3 VPN now, right, because we introduce BGP and so on. But I also wanted to bring the fact that from an automation perspective, right, customers who are looking at EVPN today, they also want a more automation, right, from a service perspective. So we have integrated, right, our EVPN solution with Yang models and with our NSO TLF orchestrator. So that's a point that's very important for our customers as well. And that piece of work has been done as well.
That's true. And that NSO stuff is actually quite an impressive SDN platform, to be fair. It was very much designed with carriers in mind. It came out of the carrier business unit, and that's where it's very centered on. So what we want to talk, I just want to get a question here, Patrice, about reliability and redundancy at the edge. What about carriers who want to be able to have multiple routers at the edge of the network, where today setting up multiple VPLSs is quite difficult and getting them to fail over requires, you know, weird things like MPLST. How is it handled inside of an EVPN network?
Oh, okay. So, well, in EVPN, well, one thing just to make sure that we are on the same page is if you talk to the geeks, we call that EV lag. So instead of MC lag, it's EV lag. Okay, so you can see EVPN lag. So with EV lag, what we are doing is you can support the all active that we talk at length today, but we can also support single active, where some of the VLAN can go on one link, some of the VLAN can go on the other link, but also you can also totally displace the MC lag as SCP base, and you can just do an active standby. One port is active, one port is standby. However, furthermore, in carrier internet, you will see a lot of legacy protocol like G8032, the MSTAG, or the RepAG that are in the access. It's more like kind of a ring protocols. EVPN can also interact very easily with them. The good news is all the back end of the EV lag, meaning mass withdraw and this type of application, will all get happened towards the core. So you will always get a better convergence. And it's very easy to get those access protocol to interact with EV lag. Basically, they're going to own the EV lag state, and you let EVPN do the back end of it. And you're
right. So where your edge is actually using lag today, there are solutions inside of EVPN that lets them work just like they are. But then there's also some advancements here where I hear you're saying you're actually load balancing the VXLANs or the overlay networks over both links. So you've got an active-active, not just an active standby like you do with lags today.
And even more, you can kill something like ICCP based protocol. So you don't need LDP, you don't need ICCP anymore, and you can just do EV lag. Cool. No, it's cool because now
you just dropped the mic again. You're supposed to let it hit the floor so everybody hears it, because that's really important, because you know, getting all those protocols working and sustaining them is hard, right? LDP is not an easy thing to troubleshoot over 200, 300, 400, 500 routers in a good sized MPLS network, and keeping and getting the reliability stuff is not easy. Whereas EVPN simplifies a lot of that because it's just part of the BGP process. It's part of the EVPN control plane, is to say, I know I need to do this, therefore it's part of the setup, right?
Correct, but think about if you have a segment running as an underlay. Try to tell your customer that, hey, you need to enable LDP to have ICP running for your MC lag. It's going to kill you. Yeah. So that's why EV lag is cool. It's going to work because you can do it with BGP.
I think we've probably taken the discussion just about as far as we can in the time available today. Hopefully, we have told you just probably as much as we can get into an hour-long discussion about Ethernet VPNs and how this technology is probably going to change everything. I personally believe that eVPN is a major transition in terms of networks that are self-autonomous or self-aware in terms of the way that, you know, in the way that SDN is a very intentional work mode built around promise theory where the software configures something and the network does it and then feedback loops, where this is eVPN as a technology that's much more like routing protocols that we're familiar with for the last 20 or 30 years, and everything has its place. So thanks very much for listening to the Packet Pushers today. Patrice, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Oh, very simple. You can find me on LinkedIn or just email to my corporate email.
All right.
So, yeah, pbrice@cisco.com.
Okay. And Nicholas, where can people find you on the internet?
Very similar information. I'm on LinkedIn. I also have an email, nbroton@cisco.com. That's an easy way to reach out to me.
Well, on that note, thanks so much for listening to Packet Pushers. And Mr. Banks, have you got any closing thoughts? I've been rabbiting on long today, and I do apologize.
Well, eVPN is becoming mature, I think, is the big takeaway here. We've been talking about eVPN on Packet Pushers for at least a couple of years now, going back to some of the very early days when it was a big idea, and what are we going to do with it, and who cares about it? And now we've seen it mature, and I think that's the big takeaway that I got.
I can remember my sense of... I wasn't quite sure if I was cynical or excited about it when I first was chatting to Lucas Cratiger from Cisco at Interop 3 years ago. And that's kind of taken me that long to get my mind around it and spend time researching it. So I'm slowly coming around to the idea that eVPN, I think, is a major transition. Well, as always, you can follow us and find many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blogs and our news at packetpushers.net. We will be talking more about eVPN across the industry because that's what we do, because that informs you, your career, and helps to keep you relevant and up to date to what's happening in the industry. We have many ways where you can follow us, including Twitter as @PacketPushers. We're on LinkedIn. You could like us on the Facebook, and it would be fantastic if you could rate us on Apple the podcast because that helps other people to find us. And as always, last and never least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.